Tony Trischka is my special guest in the second hour of today's program. If you were listening a few weeks ago, Tony was at the Gray Fox Bluegrass Festival with the students of his from Berkeley, the Rutabagers, and he played with them. We chatted with Tony amongst the Rutabagers, followed Tony around for a while. I hadn't seen him in a while. What you won't hear in this interview, as we do later in the day, is about a half-hour impromptu jam session with Ron Thomason. And after that ended, Tony and I talked about some new things that I didn't know what he was working on. I hadn't talked to him in a while. We're going to talk about things that, quite frankly, I hadn't read about. Tony works on a lot of diverse projects. You're going to learn about two of the most important coming up, I'd say, in the next year or so.
Really happy to be talking to Tony Trischka again. How are you?
Steve, I'm mighty fine. Great to be with you here.
It is. It's been so long since we talked. I don't mean before today, because we just talked earlier. But I haven't wanted to talk to you all since I don't see you that much anymore.
Right.
And I used to see you at least once a year.
In Texas.
Not in Texas.
Where?
Nashville.
Oh, Nashville. Well, Nashville, yeah.
It's close to Texas.
Close to Texas.
And I don't see you anymore. I see you here passing through. And I talked to you once this morning about... You do some work at Berkeley.
Yep.
You teach there and you go in and help. And you were here with a group from Berkeley, and we talked about the Rutabagers and all the other stuff that you do there. But I wanted to talk to you about, the audience will know by now that you're involved at Berkeley. What a wonderful thing that is. But I haven't talked to you forever. It doesn't have to be based on an album release or a new project. I just thought, I know what you're kind of doing because I see you all the time, but I don't see you. So what have you been doing? What do you got coming up? It's the middle of 2018. What are you got coming up in 2018?
Well, I fairly recently finished a new album project, which I call This Favored Land, which is a story of the Civil War. And I wrote almost all the tunes, it's almost all lyrics.
I stumbled into this.
So we're shopping it around to some labels. And it's like a true story. I've been working on this for 10 years, and finally finished it.
Really?
And it's got bluegrass, and it's got some softer things, and it's got some string quartets, and it's got an 8-piece marching band. Not marching band, but like a brass band.
Civil War.
Civil War kind of... I mean, yeah. I listed a whole bunch of Civil War marches and then tried to write something in that style. And got this guy, Van Dyke Parks, to arrange it.
I know Van Dyke. I don't know him, but I know who he is.
One of my big heroes who wrote a lot of the lyrics for the Smile album that Brian Wilson did of the Beach Boys.
Yes.
And just a visionary guy.
How did you get him, and why did you get him?
He's one of my big culture heroes.
Okay.
One of the best albums ever made, and I swear it is. Song Cycle by Van Dyke Parks. Came out in 1968. And it's the most psychedelic album ever made, and there's no electric guitars. It's just, in fact, it starts with a banjo solo, pretty much. But it's an orchestral thing that Warner Brothers put out. And he was coming out at the same time Randy Newman came out, except Randy Newman made it big and Van Dyke.
I mean, I'm a fan of Van Dyke Parks. I didn't know what the inspiration would be to get him to do it, but now you've made
that. That album made a huge difference in my life. It was just so inspirational. And then I was hanging around with I'm forgetting their name now. This old-time band, Red Clay Ramblers, somewhere in the early 90s or late 80s, and we were talking, and I said, oh, yeah, we just were hanging out with Van Dyke Parks. Really? And I said, yeah, and I'm heading out to L.A. I was about to go to L.A. for something. And they said, well, we'll give you his phone number. So I called him up when I got out there. I said, come on over. And he was working on an orchestral piece for National Geographic, and... showed me how to score with some music, and I mean, he was just like the nicest guy, and we've been friendly ever since. And he calls me once in a while, I call him. And here's this guy who was like as big as the Beatles in my life,
I know.
Major thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I asked him to, he played on my World Turning album on a song called Ladies of Refinement, and he actually, I slightly co-wrote some lyrics with him on that, but he played piano on that and sang it. And then I got him to arrange for this brass band, for this, with tuba and the whole trumpets and the whole thing.
Okay, so 10 years in the works, that's a long time, and concept till finning. But what was the impetus to do Civil War music?
And it doesn't sound like Civil War. I'm not trying to write in the style of.
Okay.
It's just whatever music I came up with.
Okay.
It started with, I don't know why, but I decided to write a song about a riverboat gambler. And I was going to use as a template the Jimmy Rogers Blue Yodel, went down to the river just to see that steamboat roll. And I got Michael Daves. We would do it when I played with Michael Daves, and he would sing the yodel and the whole thing, and we would just do that. And so I wrote that first. And then I don't know how I just started thinking, this great train robbery that happened in 1862, where these Union spies came down to North Georgia and hijacked a train, which is a pretty hard thing to do. And Disney made a movie about it, but I just researched it and got the story. And these Union spies, while people were stopped at breakfast, they got in the train and took off, heading up north, tearing up railroad track and knocking down telegraph wires. And this Confederate train going in reverse went after this train, which is called the General. Anyway, I wrote a song about this. And then and then things started falling into place, and I just decided to turn it into a story. And this band should just keep going about this story.
By the way, for people listening, we are sitting in the midst of Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival.
We're right in the midst.
Ambient sounds. You hear stuff going on, but I'm okay with that. So.
Yeah.
But no, unless I tell you to stop, you go.
All right. So I was in England at this workshop there and met this banjo player whose father was a miner, and this guy had recorded solo banjo in the mine where his father worked, and there's water coming down. But anyway, his father told him a story about this mine cave-in off the coast of England where the mine went under the Atlantic Ocean, and then at some point the water pressure broke down and killed all these miners. So I transported that to Ireland and told the story about this woman whose husband died in this mine cave-in with the ocean caving in on it. And she left her children behind to come to America to make a better life for herself. She meets this riverboat gambler who's killed someone over a dance hall girl. And anyway, they get married. They have a child who becomes a drummer boy. The riverboat gambler becomes he joins the Confederacy. And just the story goes from there. And then I had this amazing experience. I was in Asheville, North Carolina. Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And met this gentleman who is a historian at the college there. I was at the Swannanoa gathering. He said, we're clearing this slave graveyard, and if you'd like to come tomorrow, I could take you there. And it's like, whoa, of course, I need to go. So the next morning,
Did you want to go there? Just for the historical value?
For the historical value, and just it's something that's really important to our history, you know, that this happened. And I get there, and there's a guy named George Avery, who was a slave grave digger for his enslaver, his master. And he was in his teens, I think, when he started. He was an enslaved African, and he was the grave digger for this plantation. Then these other plantation owners would send their deceased enslaved Africans to be buried. Anyway, so here we are at this graveyard, which is right next to this old church. And there's just these rocks in the ground, on top of the ground. And that's where somebody was buried. There was no headstone, no engraving, just a rock. And that indicated that in the 1860s or 1850s even, someone was buried there. And his enslaver, this George Avery's enslaver, said, this was like in 1865 apparently, his enslaver said, I'm freeing you, go to Union lines, join the Union Army, and you'll have a pension. You'll have something, as opposed to all these other enslaved who were freed and then had nothing. Just trying to make their way. At least he had a pension. Came back and remained as a gravedigger at this place. It was just like amazing story.
When you went there, were you thinking of continuing or contributing to this new album, or just wanted to go for the historical?
I just wanted to go for the historical value, but it was such a moving experience. And this gentleman did like a seismic, I don't know what you would call it. They found there were 1,900 bodies under the ground. And it was just such a moving experience. I went home, and we're at the room I was staying in. This guy, he's a banjo player. He had his banjo in a weird tuning. And so I wrote this tune that night with lyrics about this experience I'd had. And I've since changed the melody and play it differently. But it was just this very moving experience.
You've always been a student of the music and the culture surrounding the music and the before and where it's going. But so I'm not surprised you're taking that approach. Ever since I've known you, you've always wanted to learn more. And in the not just always in a musical context, but music runs throughout the culture and history, but you always wanted to know the little details behind it. That's, I mean, from what I've known you, that's been true.
Right. And it was important to me to have that African-American element in this, because that's part of the really, really important part of the Civil War. And I wasn't sure how the story I wanted to tell about that. So anyway, so I've written 3 or 4 tunes. I researched enslaved graveside stories. I had this woman who's a backup, has been a backup singer for Steely Dan, amazing singer, who sang 4 parts, and I don't know. I could go into all the details.
I have
about 4 tunes that talk to that experience, and then it goes on that this Confederate soldier is in Gettysburg, and this enslaved African with the Union Army at this point shoots this Confederate soldier. And I researched that, and there was one African-American at Gettysburg in the battle, apparently. There were black troops nearby, but only one who was a civilian and just picked up a rifle, and because he would have been brought back to slavery if he'd been captured by the Confederates. So he was firing lead down on the graybacks, is the quote I got. And I got Keith Carradine to do a... There's some spoken word.
No kidding.
This goes on and on, but I got John Lithgow to do part of an FDR speech, because they had a reunion in 1938 of all, you know, many, however many could get there, surviving soldiers of that battle from 1863. And I found a video of it on YouTube. These soldiers in uniform, in any case, in their late 80s and early 90s, shaking hands across this wall, stone wall that they fought across.
Right.
So I wrote
pretty comprehensive.
So I found the speech that FDR gave at that gathering, and had John Lithgow read part of that for spoken word.
Wow.
So anyway, it's a fairly involved story.
Yeah. This is a great. I mean, I had no idea you were doing this. I'm not surprised when you tell me that the path you're taking, because I do recognize how your mind works and the scope that you approach projects, especially something that's going to give you 10 years. But this is really an important piece of music, I think, to you, and I think for people who listen. I think it's going to be a nice focus point for the music and the Civil War and the slavery. And I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I'm very excited about it, and I'm looking towards moving it into becoming a theater piece of some sort.
Well, I was going to see if it was going to come up, because that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I'm talking to a couple of people, and you know, it's very early now, but want to get it out and released, but which will be relatively soon, sometime later this year. But I'm also pursuing this theater kind of a thing, so whatever that's going to be.
Are you thinking musical, dramatical? Of course, you got all the music in it. I mean, are you just too early to think yet?
No, I mean, it depends. I'm reading this book by Stephen Sondheim, because he kind of knows about musicals just a little bit, and he says you don't need a lot of. Like, if you have a book, the book that goes with the musical, you don't need a lot of verbiage, let's say. The music should carry it. You can have, you know, you need some talking. I've got some, but I need more. But, and he also said, it's good to have an element of surprise, and also a good element of ambiguity. So I've got a little surprise, got a little ambiguity. I have some of these things. So I'm, you know, I'm just kind of checking stuff out.
This is great.
See what I can do with it, anyway.
I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah.
When it comes around, I'll find it, and I'll maybe find you again somewhere.
Yeah.
See what you think, because it's ready. It's essentially ready as a
finished
project.
It's all totally recorded and mixed.
Okay.
And we need the artwork, but there's something called Harper's Weekly that had all these amazing Civil War engravings in it, and there's some amazing pictures that I think will adorn this.
Wow.
Yeah.
This will be fantastic. Well. That's a lot. And like I said, I don't have to talk to you just about projects, but and it's the middle of 2018. I know you do certain things throughout the year, and if we can touch on that briefly, then I'll let you go. Because I know you.
No, no, that's fine.
So you.
My time is your time.
You're at Grey Fox for just today, and you're moving on. You have other things going on. I know that you play with Mike Daves. I know that, which I've seen that here, is phenomenal.
Yeah.
That's a machine right now. I mean,
he's amazing.
And it's a great setup, and So what else are you doing as Tony Trischka, the banjo guy?
Well, let's see. I'm going to I have this ArtistWorks online school, Tony Trischka School of Banjo. And
that's right. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that.
I'm going to Rocky Grass on Sunday.
Okay.
And all the bluegrass people are going to be there. Mike Marshall, Daryl Anger, Brian Sutton, Missy Raines, Michael Daves, and we're doing a show out. I mean, we're teaching during the week. We're all teaching at they call it the Academy there. We're teaching Monday through Thursday, and then we're playing on Saturday with that band. And we got a kick-ass singer with Michael Daves, and the other guys can pick pretty good, too, to say the least. So we're doing that, and then I'm heading out to Wyoming to the Grand Targhee Festival to play out there, do some teaching, and then doing Bela Fleck. First ever banjo gathering.
Yes.
Which I'm really excited about. Blue Ridge Banjo Camp.
I've read a lot about that.
Yeah.
That'll be a good time. You were mentioning, as we're walking around, I'm following you around, and you're talking about what's your Christmas show?
Yeah, I do a Christmas show every year, and it changes every year depending on who's available and who's still around. My son's going to be playing drums in it, and a woman named Phoebe Hunt, who's like this ungodly amazing singer, one of my favorite people in the world, and a guy named Tim Erickson, who sings shape note music amongst many other things. And for my first Christmas album, I had some shape note singing on there, and I had him and this group, Northampton Harmony, that he had at the time. So it's this really stark, austere kind of amazing music. So he can do it with two people. It's usually done with at least four, and often larger groupings than that. But anyway, so it'll be
You're just not comfortable being still, are you?
Not really, not really.
I don't mean in your chair here. I just mean,
I'm getting
musically.
Really fidgety talking to you here, Steve.
But musically, though.
Yeah, no, he keeps
you're
it
always
interesting.
Exploring. You're always becoming.
Well, it's not, life is short,
Yes.
I mean, and I like to just keep trying things. And Bruce Molsky and I are going to record an album towards the end of the year. Just a duet album.
And big fan of Bruce.
Yeah, me too.
I finally got him on the show after Raleigh a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Because I sat at the table with his wife, and I said, could you maybe get him to... Worked out. He had a great time. What a great guy.
Such a great guy.
Yeah. He had just done that Civil War album.
Yeah. The Voices.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember the name right now, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a wonderful thing that she gave me, and I went back and read it and prepared and do all the stuff that I normally do, and I had a blast.
Yeah.
This is all about having... I'm a very selfish person. This is all about having fun for me and indulging myself along the way.
Oh, I'm the same way. I do a lot of interviews.
I enjoy the heck out of it.
I do a lot of interviews for my website.
Yes.
And so I get to... I've got like over 45 interviews there with, Malin, Noam, and Kristen Scott Benson, and on and on and on.
Is this the website that you do lessons through?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, say the name of that again.
It's the Tony Trischka School of Banjo. Okay. You can just Google my name and it comes up.
Okay.
But, I love it. I get to talk to Bill Keith for, X amount of time. And I know his story, but just to hang out with all my favorite people.
Tony, I know that you have a lot of projects going on. This year, 2018, 2019, you have kind of a special thing, too, that you're doing.
Yeah, I'm doing my first ever, and maybe the first ever, banjo safari in South Africa near Johannesburg, and just got invited to do this. David Greer and Russ Barenberg have worked with this guy, but not particularly doing safaris, but he's doing these safaris now. We did one with Keb Mo, and he's done a couple of these things. So anyway,
you actually hunt live banjos. Is that
somehow
what
they're
do
in the.
What do you do?
I don't know. You go to the Veld, and there they are. So it's this 5 or 6 day thing. You fly to South Africa. Never been to Africa before. And in the morning, you go out for a safari early in the morning. Afternoon banjo, banjo instruction, and then late afternoon into the early evening. Another safari, so two safaris a day and one banjo get together, and there are only six people. That the way his business model works, he only wants six people as students, and people can bring their loved ones. And my son Sean's going to be with me also, just playing some mandolin and for backup and helping with jam sessions and whatnot.
So our students go with you?
Well, we all meet there. It's not
okay.
I bring them, but we all will meet in Johannesburg, and then come up to this festival. And again, six students is all that he is accommodating.
And they will be part of your class, and then they'll go on the safari with you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, once we all get up to this, I'm not quite sure. I mean, we go into this national park, basically,
okay.
And we're staying at this kind of resort. Hotel isn't quite the right word. I've seen pictures of it. It's just kind of a lot of open, really nice place. And we have our own chef, and it sounds like this pretty ridiculous, amazing thing to do and play
banjo. It sounds like a lot of fun.
It is, yeah. And we go out in some sort of vehicle and check out the rhinos.
You know what this would get? An Africa album.
Bela did that.
I know. I was going to
say
that.
Did that. I don't know. Well, who knows? I might do a Dr. Doolittle album or something. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
All right. This is great, man. I'm so glad to see you again.
So good to see you, Steve.
Followed you around. We got to sit and you got to play with some friends and play music, which is what you can't resist.
Hard to. I just got to play with Ron Thomas. Then.
Yeah.
I haven't played with him in years.
It was a blast.
He had his mandolin on his back, and let's play a couple.
You got to do that. You got to do that.
Yeah.
I was happy to be in the audience. I was happy to be witnessed, I guess.
Nice to connect with people, just talking to them musically, too.
Yeah.
Make that connection.
I'm going to let you go because I know you're probably going to get out of here. You're not doing anything else here today.
No, this is a relaxed thing. Right. It's great. And so just getting to hang out. It's great.
Well, Tony, thanks so much for putting up with me and letting me chase you
anytime,
down for a while.
Anytime, Steve. Not putting up at all.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's a joy.
All right.